Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this first bidder information webcast relating to the New Jersey Electric Distribution Company, or EDC's, proposal for the procurement of their basic generation service, or BGS load. My name is Paul Cardona, and presenting with me today is Rachel Northcutt. We're both from NERA, which is the BGS auction manager. We will answer any questions you have regarding this webcast at the end of the presentation. To submit text questions to the presenters, please click on the chat icon on the bottom of your screen. The chat panel will appear on the right. Type in your question and click enter. Before getting into the presentation, I'd like to read a quick disclaimer. Specifically, any statements herein describing or referring to documents and agreements are summaries only and are qualified in their entirety by our reference to the governing documents, which are all the documents included in the EDC's July 1, 2025 filing posted to the BGS proceeding page of the auction tab of the BGS auction website, which is www.bgs-auction.com. These documents include the EDC's joint proposal, the BGS CIEP and BGS RACP provisional auction rules, the BGS CIEP and BGS RACP supplier master agreements, and each EDC's company specific addendum, including draft tariff sheets and pricing factors. Today we'll discuss roles, give a broad overview of the EDC's July filing, discuss products and rates, provide an overview of bidding in the auctions, go over the auction itself, and then review the central source of information relating to the auctions, which is the auction website. Again, that's bgs-auction.com. There are well-defined roles for the auction manager, the EDCs, the board, and the board's consultant. The EDCs are responsible for elements of the proposal. The auction manager is responsible for carrying out auction promotional efforts, communicating information, organizing responses to bidder questions, and administering the auctions in accordance with the auction rules as approved by the board. The board's consultant oversees the conduct of the auctions and briefs the board during the auction process. The board monitors the auctions and reviews and renders a decision on the final auction results. The next portion of the presentation will be dedicated to an overview of the EDC's July 1, 2025 filing. The BGS auction process is designed to select the most effective portfolio managers to supply New Jersey's BGS customers at a cost in line with market conditions. The BGS auctions are designed to attract a diverse set of suppliers that bring the full gamut of supply strategies to bear on managing the BGS supply portfolio. Each BGS supplier is responsible for assembling its own portfolio of products that it believes will make the best bid and to provide risk management services. There are certain regulatory milestones that happen prior to the deadline for submission of the Part 1 application that I list here on the slide. Final comments for the 2026 BGS proceeding were due last Friday on October 10th. The next major milestone is the board's decision on the EDC's BGS proposal, and that is expected in November. The EDC's proposed two auctions, the BGS RSCP auction for procuring supply for residential and smaller commercial customers. Supply is procured on a three-year rolling basis so that customers at any given point in time are served supply procured through prices determined at three different auctions. The auction determines an all-in price and cents per kilowatt hour, and suppliers are paid this price for every kilowatt hour of load served. The second auction is the BGS CIP auction to procure supply for larger commercial and industrial customers over a one-year supply period. The auction determines a CIP price and dollars per megawatt day that suppliers are paid based on their capacity obligation. Suppliers are also paid for energy at the real-time hourly spot price, as well as a predetermined rate for ancillary services. In both auctions, supply is procured for all EDCs at once so that each auction has four products, where a product is the BGS load for a given EDC. Consistent with prior years, the auction format is proposed as a descending clock auction, which occurs over multiple rounds and where supply is procured for all EDCs at once. Over several rounds, bidders submit bids and receive information regarding those bids, and then bidders have an opportunity to bid again at a lower price in a subsequent round as prices tick down. Suppliers are able to make decisions using information they receive in the auction and are able to switch their bids from one EDC to another or remove bids from the auction. A single price is determined for each EDC in an auction when the amount of bids falls below the amount needed for each of the EDCs. Aside from the EDC's responsibility for transmission, BGS suppliers will continue to have load serving responsibility for BGS loads. BGS suppliers will be physically and financially responsible for the hour-by-hour provisions for the electricity of New Jersey's BGS customers. The full requirement service will continue to include energy, capacity, ancillary services, as well as obligations to fulfill New Jersey's Renewable Portfolio Standards, or RPS, and other services that PJM may require. The basic structure and terms of the standard contract have been maintained from prior years. The standard contract for the BGS RSCP auction also maintains capacity proxy price supplements in line with each BGS RSCP auction since 2020. As in prior years, during the application process, BGS suppliers must agree to the terms of the standard contract that is approved by the board, and those terms are non-negotiable. Of note, suppliers must meet PJM LSE requirements and provide PJM short names to the EDCs by May 1st, 2026. In each BGS proceeding since 2020, the board approved the use of capacity proxy prices as the actual capacity prices for some delivery years in the various supply periods were not known prior to those auctions. EDCs again proposed to set capacity proxy prices this year for energy year 2028 and energy year 2029, to the extent that the capacity prices for those energy years are not known at least 5 business days prior to the start of the BGS RSCP auction. Under the supplements to the proposed BGS RSCP SMA, the BGS RSCP supplier would be paid or would pay the difference between the rate that the supplier pays for its capacity and the capacity proxy price for each of energy year 28 and 29. I'll include here that the BRA for the results for the BRA for the 27 and 28 delivery year are expected to be known on in December 2025. The results for the BRA for the 28-29 delivery year are expected to be known in June 2026. Excuse me. The EDCs propose a market-based rate design that reflects auction prices, and that would be approved in advance by the board. Consistent with auctions since 2021, transmission is removed from the BGS supplier responsibilities, and all EDCs show a separate transmission charge to customers. BGS RSCP rates are determined by the auctions. BGS CIP rates are determined by the final CIP price for an EDC, which a customer pays based on its capacity obligation. BGS CIP customers also pay for other components of supply separately. We are coming up on several important deadlines for postings and comment processes prior to the Part 1 application deadline. I'll go into a little bit more detail on the comment processes for the letters of credit on the next slide, for which the deadline to propose modifications is October 28th. Another date I want to flag here for you is the announcement of the minimum and maximum starting prices, which is set to occur on November 14th. Bidders may, but are not required to, comment on the draft pre-auction and post-auction letters of credit that were posted to the contract and credit page of the BGS auction website on October 9th. The EDCs will use an electronic pre-auction letter of credit, and a hard copy document will not be used. The deadline for the submission comments on the draft letters of credit is Tuesday, October 28th, and not during the application process. I'll now spend some time describing the BGS product as well as BGS rates. BGS suppliers are load serving entities for a percentage of an EDC's load broken down into tranches. An EDC's total BGS load is equal to the total retail load in an EDC's territory minus load served by third-party suppliers. And EDC's BGS CIAP load consists of BGS load served at transmission voltage, as well as the load associated with larger customers with a peak load contribution of 500 kW or greater. And EDC's BGS RSCP load is equal to an EDC's total BGS load minus an EDC's BGS CIAP load. As always, BGS customers are free to come and go from BGS. BGS RSCP load is broken down into tranches. A tranche is a fixed percentage of BGS RSCP load for an EDC that represents approximately 10 megawatts or 100 megawatts on an eligible basis and approximately 5,000 megawatts statewide on an eligible basis. We provide in the table on this slide the current peak load shares, tranche targets, tranche sizes, and megawatt measures for the BGS, the 2026 BGS RSCP auction. BGS RSCP rates are based on auction prices, which determine an average cost for an EDC. These rates are both seasonally adjusted and tranche weighted based on the auction prices from the three auctions covered by a delivery year. Our ratio translates average cost into a rate for a particular class. All classes have seasonal rates. Some classes also have time of day rates. Customers will also pay an EDC specific transmission charge. BGS RSCP suppliers assume the risk of providing full requirement service to New Jersey's BGS RSCP customers. The full requirement service will continue to include capacity, energy, ancillary services, as well as obligations to fulfill New Jersey's RPS and other services that PJM may require. BGS RSCP suppliers are responsible for evaluating and managing the risks associated with providing BGS RSCP load, including migration risks, load and weather risks, changes to the class composition, change to the rate design, and changes to New Jersey's RPS. For their role, BGS RSCP suppliers are paid the final auction price for an EDC for each kilowatt hour of load served. As mentioned earlier in the presentation, the EDCs propose the use of capacity proxy prices for the 2027, 2028, and 2028-29 delivery years consistent with their use in contracts since the 2020 BGS RSCP auction. The table on the slide contains a proposed method for the setting of capacity proxy prices. The provisions relating to capacity proxy prices are found in supplements to the BGS RSCP SMA. In the delivery year associated with the capacity proxy prices, suppliers may be paid or may pay the difference between the rate paid by the BGS RSCP supplier for capacity and the capacity proxy price for that delivery year. Similar to BGS RSCP load, BGS CIAP load is broken down into tranches. These tranches represent approximately 75 megawatts on an eligible basis and approximately 2,700 megawatts statewide on an eligible basis. We provide in the table on the slide the peak load shares, tranche targets, tranche sizes, and megawatt measures for the 2026 BGS CIAP auction. BGS CIAP customer rates are based on the final CIAP price determined at the auction, which customers pay based on the capacity obligation. BGS CIAP customers are also responsible for the real-time hourly spot price for energy, a predetermined ancillary services rate, and an EDC-specific transmission charge. All CIAP customers pay the CIAP standby fee. BGS CIAP suppliers assume the risk of providing full requirement service to New Jersey's BGS CIAP customers. BGS CIAP suppliers are responsible for evaluating and managing the risk associated with providing BGS CIAP load, including migration risks, ancillary service cost risk, as well as changes to New Jersey's RPS. For their role, BGS CIAP suppliers are paid the CIAP price, the CIAP standby fee, a real-time hourly spot price for energy, and predetermined rates for ancillary services. BGS suppliers are responsible for fulfilling the obligations of New Jersey's RPS, including Class 1, Class 2, and solar requirements. Suppliers must register into GATS and be able to transfer RECs and SRECs to the EDCs. Please note that suppliers are also responsible for meeting the requirements of New Jersey's Transition Incentive Program and Successor Solar Incentive Program, Suppliers do not pay for transition renewable energy credits, or TRECs, as well as SREC2s. Instead, TRECs and SREC2s are retired to the administrator's gas account, and then the statewide Class 1 requirement is reduced on a one-to-one basis. At this point, I'll pass the presentation to Rachel to bring us home.
Thanks, Paul. Good morning, everyone. In this next section, I'll provide some more information on bidding in the auctions. Now, as Paul mentioned, the proposed format of the auctions is a clock auction, and specifically the format features a multi-product and multi-round design. What we mean by multi-product is that the tranches for all EDCs are procured at once. And what we mean by multi-round is that the auction proceeds in a number of rounds. But in a given round, the auction manager suggests prices for each of the EDCs, and suppliers state the number of tranches they are willing to supply at the suggested prices. If there is excess supply, meaning that there are more tranches that are bid than are needed in a given round, then the prices in the auction will tick down. And as the auction progresses, suppliers can switch their bids from one EDC to another in response to changes in price. This slide provides an example of the clock auction format from the perspective of the BGS RSCP auction. You see data here for two rounds, rounds one and two. In round one, the price of 18 cents per kilowatt hour is the same across all EDCs. Just a note here that the prices in this example are illustrative, so it's not necessarily the case that prices in round one will be the same across all EDCs in the actual auction. So at these prices shown here, suppliers would be asked to state the number of tranches that they're willing to supply for each EDC. The number bid column gives the total number of tranches bid across all bidders for each EDC, and the number to buy column lists the target for each EDC, which is the number of tranches needed for that EDC. Excess supply is calculated as the difference between the number of tranches needed and the number of tranches bid for that EDC. And in this example, the number of tranches bid for RICO is 2, and the number of tranches needed is also 2, so excess supply for RICO is 0. But the auction will not end for RICO, and that is because bidders have the ability to switch their bids from one EDC to another in subsequent rounds of the auction. So it's possible that in a later round, suppliers will switch back into RICO. And then generally speaking, the auction will end for all EDCs at the same time, to allow the possibility of suppliers switching in any given round. In this example, there is excess supply in the auction, so the auction will move into round two, and the prices will tick down for each EDC for which there is excess supply. In this case, the prices will tick down for PSE&G, JCP&L, and for ACE. The amount by which the prices will tick down depends on what's called the oversupply ratio, which is the ratio between the amount of excess supply that's actually on the EDC compared to the maximum excess supply that that EDC could have. The higher the oversupply ratio, generally speaking, the higher the excess supply, and the more the price will tick down for that EDC. With the new prices for round two, suppliers state the number of tranches they're willing to supply for each EDC, and we see that suppliers have switched their tranches around, and there are fewer tranches bid on PSE&G compared to round one, and now more tranches bid on JCP&L and RICO. There's now positive excess supply for all EDCs, so the prices for all EDCs will tick down this round. This process continues until there is no more excess supply on any of the EDCs, and at that point, the prices will not tick down any further, and those will be the final auction clearing prices for each EDC. I'll discuss here a few main features of the auctions, one being that any offer presented in a round of the auction is binding. If a supplier has bid a number of tranches on an EDC in a round, and if the price for that EDC is not reduced in the next round, the bidder cannot reduce the number of tranches bid on that EDC. Also, the total number of tranches bid across all of the EDCs cannot increase. Bidders can switch their bids in a round and bid more tranches on one EDC, but to do so, they must decrease the number of tranches bid on another EDC. The third feature is one we've already touched on. It's that the auction closes on all EDCs at once. And in this way, winners in an auction are determined for all EDCs at once, and so are the auction clearing prices. And that brings us to the fourth feature. That's that all winners in an auction receive the same auction clearing price for that EDC in that auction. We've discussed that the auction features a multi-round design. Now, in a given round, there are three phases: a bidding phase, a calculating phase, and a reporting phase. The bidding phase is the time allotted in a round where suppliers state the number of tranches that they're willing to supply at the suggested price for each EDC. Once the bidding phase ends, the calculating phase begins, and this is when the auction manager tabulates the results of the round as well as the next round's price for each EDC. Once these calculations are complete, the reporting phase begins, and bidders will then have access to the next round's price for each EDC. And at this time, bidders will also have access to an indication of the total excess supply in the auction for that round. Once the reporting phase ends, the bidding phase of the next round begins, and the cycle continues until the auction ends. A bid in the first round is relatively simple. It's just the number of tranches a supplier is willing to bid for each EDC. It is possible that the volume can be reduced in round one of an auction, but this would only be done if it's necessary to ensure the competitiveness of the bidding environment. Whether this adjustment is needed is decided on the basis of interest in the first round of bidding. If the volume must be reduced, then it's reduced in a way that will ensure that there is sufficient tranches bid for each tranche to be procured. In subsequent rounds, bidders can leave their bids unchanged, so they can bid the same number of tranches bid for each EDC that they bid in a previous round. If a price for an EDC has ticked down, a bidder could reduce the number of tranches bid on that EDC by either withdrawing tranches and removing them from the auction or by switching, which is bidding those tranches on one or several other EDCs. And remember here that a bidder cannot increase the total number of tranches it bids in the auction, but can only decrease the total number that it bids, or it can switch its bids amongst the EDCs. I mentioned that in the reporting phase of a round, bidders have access to various information on the results of that round. Bidders will have access to a report about the bidder's own bid from that round, but will not have access to information about any other bidder's bid. Bidders will also have access to the price for each EDC for the next round, as well as an indication of the total excess supply in the auction during that round. The example on the slide is from the perspective of the BGS CIEP auction and demonstrates some of the information provided to bidders in the reporting phase. And you'll see in the second row of this table that after the results were tabulated in the calculating phase of round five, the actual value of total excess supply in the auction was between 76 and 80 tranches. The auction closes on all EDCs at once when total excess supply is zero, and at this point, prices can no longer tick down. At the end of the auction, all winners for an EDC will receive the same auction clearing price for that EDC in that auction. Under the EDC's proposed process, once the auctions have closed, the board will render its decision on the results within 2 business days of the close of the last auction. The board does have the option of rendering a decision on the results of each auction at different times. If the board accepts the results of the auction, the EDCs and the winning suppliers must execute the SMAs within 3 business days of the board's decision. And additionally, any security required under the creditworthiness standards of the SMA is posted upon contract execution. Now, in this next section, I'll provide more information on the auction process, and I'll offer some general information on applying to participate in the auctions. Now, first, the board plays a key role in the auction process because the board has the final say on all aspects of the EDC's proposal. The board reviews the proposal and takes into consideration any comments from other stakeholders as well as the EDCs, and then it determines whether the proposal is approved, and if it's approved, whether the proposal or any included documents require changes. This means that the final approved versions of the auction rules and SMAs and auction process may be different than what's presented here today. Following the board's decision on the EDC's proposal, if the board approves the proposal, the EDCs will make a compliance filing that will include the final auction rules and SMAs for the auctions. These final documents will then be made available on the BGS website for bidders to review, but preliminary versions of these files that were included as part of the EDC's joint proposal are currently available on the BGS website. This slide lists some key dates that are to come after the board's decision. One is that following the board's decision, bidders will be able to begin submitting their application materials to become eligible to participate in the auctions. The Part 1 application is expected to be made available on December 2nd, and the deadline for bidders to submit their Part 1 application is December 16th at 12 p.m. Eastern. The Part 2 application will become available after the Part 1 application window has closed, and bidders will need to submit their Part 2 application by January 14th. Bidders that successfully fulfill the requirements of the Part 1 and Part 2 applications will then be eligible to participate in the auctions in early February. Now, bidders can apply to participate in one or both of the BGS CIEP and BGS RSCP auctions by completing the Part 1 and then the Part 2 applications. The Part 1 and Part 2 applications are submitted through two separate online forms that will be available at bgs-application.com. If you're a returning bidder, an email will be sent to you with instructions on how to activate your account to be able to access the online applications, and you'll receive this activation email closer to when the Part 1 application becomes available. New bidders will need to request an account to access the applications in order to receive the same activation email. In general, both the Part 1 and Part 2 applications will require bidders to provide various information, provide supporting documentation, and complete and upload additional files that are called inserts. Inserts are separate Microsoft Word files that applicants will need to complete and then upload to the online forms. Both the Part 1 and Part 2 applications will require bidders to make a number of certifications, including agreeing to the terms of the SMA and the auction rules. Just a reminder, the final versions of the auction rules and SMAs for purposes of making these certifications are filed to be in compliance with the board's decision on the BGS proposals. So the final versions of the auction rules and SMAs may be different than what's presented today. Another reminder here that bidders that are not yet PJM load serving entities or LSEs will be required to provide evidence with their Part 2 application that they've started the process to become qualified as a PJM LSE and that PJM has started its review of their application materials to do so. Again, this only applies to those bidders who were at the time of submitting the Part 1 application. They do not yet meet PJM LSE requirements. This slide provides some of the different requirements of the Part 1 and Part 2 applications. For example, in the Part 1 application, bidders will provide contact information for the applicant, including information for an authorized representative and a set of additional nominees, and these individuals will be copied on all correspondence from the auction manager. Note here that there are no state licenses required to participate in the BGS auctions. However, a BGS supplier must be a load-serving entity in PJM before the start of the supply period. Applicants that are not yet BGS suppliers will need to show that they are either already an LSE or they must certify that nothing impedes them from becoming an LSE. And as I just mentioned, these bidders will be required to provide evidence with their Part 2 application that they started the process to become qualified as a PJM LSE and that PJM has started its review of their application materials. Bidders also provide financial information and credit ratings in the Part 1 application that will be used to determine the amount and the type of pre-auction security a bidder must provide with its Part 2 application. Bidders will also need to provide the same information for their guarantor if they're choosing to rely on one. If a bidder satisfies all requirements of the Part 1 application, that bidder is said to be a qualified bidder. Only qualified bidders may submit a Part 2 application. In the Part 2 application, bidders must name an indicative offer, which is the number of tranches a bidder is willing to bid at the minimum and the maximum starting prices in each auction. Bidders must also provide pre-auction security with their Part 2 application. This is provided in the form of a pre-auction letter of credit, and for some bidders, also a letter of reference from a bank, or a letter of intent to provide a guarantee. The amount of pre-auction security is determined by a bidder's indicative offer at the maximum starting price that they submit in the Part 2 application. For the BGS CIEP auction, that amount is $375,000 per tranche. For the BGS RSCP auction, that amount is $500,000 per tranche, plus any additional pre-auction security that may be required, depending on the credit information the bidder provided in its Part 1 application, and if that bidder is relying on a guarantor. If a bidder completes and satisfies the requirements of both the Part 1 and the Part 2 application, that bidder is said to be a registered bidder and is eligible to participate in the auctions. But ahead of submitting these application materials, bidders have the opportunity to review and propose modifications to the draft forms of the pre-auction and post-auction letters of credit. Bidders are welcome to provide comments on one or both the pre-auction and post-auction letters of credit, but any and all proposed modifications must be submitted to the BGS auction manager as redlined Microsoft Word files. The EDCs will review each proposed modification and either revise the standard form of the letter of credit, approve the use of the modification on an optional basis, or reject the proposed modification entirely. The deadline to submit proposed modification to the letters of credit is October 28th, and any comments or proposed modifications should be sent to the BGS auction manager by email to bgs-auction@nira.com. Bidders proposing modifications will receive a response from the auction manager that will indicate which proposed modifications are acceptable to the EDCs and which are not. And this response will be sent on November 5th. On November 7th, the auction manager will post a list of all of the acceptable modifications to the letters of credit on the contract and credit page of the website. Bidders planning to rely on the financial standing of a guarantor should review the form of guarantee that's included as an appendix to the SMAs. Bidders with corporate policies preventing them from using the standard form of the guarantee may propose an alternate form of guarantee by participating in the alternate guarantee process. Bidders interested in participating in this process should send an email to the auction manager, and then we'll provide you some additional information about requirements and deadlines. The deadline to express interest in this process is October 28th. Please also note that there are a number of minimum requirements for an alternate form of guarantee, and this list of requirements can be found on the contract and credit page of the BGS website. Now, to wrap up today's presentation, I'll go over the BGS auction website and point out some additional resources for bidders considering participating in the auctions. So our website address is bgs-auction.com. On the site, bidders can find the auction rules and the supplier master agreements, as well as a detailed calendar that lays out the auction timeline. We also have a contact us page where you can submit to us any questions you may have about the auctions. And also on this page, you can register to receive announcements about the auctions. Bidders also have access to various data located on the monthly data page and the additional data page. These can be found on the Data Room tab of the website. Specifically, the EDCs make available aggregate data as well as BGS CIEP and BGS RSCP specific data, including hourly load and peak load allocation files. We also include switching statistics so that bidders can see the amount of migration for each EDC when customers switch from taking BGS to taking service from a third-party supplier. You may submit questions to the auction manager through the BGS website, but you can also send questions to us via email. Bidder questions and responses will eventually be posted to the BGS website on our FAQs page, but any sensitive or confidential information will be removed before posting. This last slide provides a number of other links to various pages on the PJM website, including their page regarding the reliability pricing model, as well as their page related to PJM GATS. Now, that concludes the presentation portion of this webcast.